भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 1, Chapter 13, Rejoice and Quits Home, text number 29. Ivam Raja Vidurina Lujina Ragya Chakshu Bodhina Ajmidha Chidvatsvishu Snehatvashan Dabdhindo Nishchakrama Bhattu Sandhashita Dva Evam Thus Raja King Dhritarashtra Vidurina Anujinha, by his younger brother Vidura, Pragya, introspective knowledge, Chakshu, eyes, Bodhita, being understood, Ajmida, Dhritarashtra, sign of the family of Ajmida. Jidva, by breaking. Sveshu, regarding kinsmen. Sneha Vasan, strong network of affection. Dalinna, because of steadfastness. Nishchakrama, got out. Bratra, by his brother, Sandarshita, direction to, Advā, the path of liberation. Thus, Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the scion of the family of Ajamida, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, Pragyam, broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother Vidura. Purport by His Divine Grace, P.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great preacher of the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, has stressed the importance of association with sadhus, pure devotees of the Lord. He said that even by a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can achieve all perfection. We are not ashamed to admit that this fact was experienced in our practical life. Were we not favored by His Divine Grace, Srimad Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, by our first meeting for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Without seeing Him at that opportune moment, we could have become a very great business magnate, but never would we have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the factual service of the Lord under instructions of His Divine Grace. And here is another practical example by the action of Vidura's association with Dhritarashtra. Maharaj Dhritarashtra was tightly bound in a network of material affinities related to politics, economy, and family attachment, and he did everything in his power to achieve so-called success in his planned projects, but he was frustrated from the beginning to the end, so far as his material activities were concerned. And yet, despite his life of failure, he achieved the greatest of all successes in self-realization by the forceful instructions of pure devotee of the Lord, who is the typical emblem of a sadhu. The scriptures enjoin, therefore, that one should associate with sadhus only, rejecting all other kinds of association, and by doing so, one will have ample opportunity to hear the sadhus who can cut to pieces the bonds of illusory affection in the material world. It is a fact that the material world is a great illusion because everything appears to be a tangible reality, but at the next moment evaporates like the dashing foam of the sea or a cloud in the sky. A cloud in the sky undoubtedly appears to be a reality because it rains, and due to rain so many temporary green things appear. But in the ultimate issue, everything disappears, namely the cloud, rain and green vegetation, and all in due course. But the sky remains, and the varieties of sky or luminaries also remain forever. Similarly, the absolute truth, which is compared to the sky, remains eternally, and the temporary cloud-like illusion comes and goes away. Foolish living beings are attracted by the temporary cloud, but intelligent men are more concerned with the eternal sky and all its variegatedness. Evam raja durin anudhinha jachakshu bodhita arjamidha chitva sveshu sneha pasandadhinho nishchakrama vrattu sandarsita divat. Thus, Maharaj Dhritarashtra, the son of the family of Ajamida, firmly convinced by introspective knowledge, Pragya, broke at once the strong network of familial affection by his resolute determination. Thus he immediately left home to set out on the path of liberation as directed by his younger brother, Madhura. So, here, Madhura has been speaking to Dhritarashtra and explaining to him about his position in material existence, and he has been speaking very strongly to Dhritarashtra, helping him to understand that, in essence, Dhritarashtra is living in a completely illusory concept of his existence, trying to believe that somehow or another he is happy, when in fact Dhritarashtra's position is that he is living a miserable existence, perhaps less than the dogs, and his position is somewhat shameful, but Dhritarashtra seems to be shameless. Dhritarashtra, by the very strong words of Madhura, he then began to silently digest. He finally digested those instructions, and he understood that my younger brother is correct. There's actually no point to continue my existence, which is for all purposes useless. It's a useless existence. He's correct. I'm living uselessly. There's no happiness, it's miserable, my life is a complete ruin, it is a complete mess, everything is ruined like that. So he understood that. He also considered that, you know, he understood that no one, you know, in history ever achieves an auspicious destination if they live to the very last moment just trying to enjoy, you know, the sense gratification. And he considered his history that, you know, he had done every possible evil to the Pandavas in order to destroy them, and yet now he's living, you know, shamelessly among them. You know, the people he despised in one sense, or tried to ruin, and now he's living, just accepting some remnants to maintain his life. And of course, Bhima was always very unforgiving in reminding him of everything, every bad thing that he had done, and you know, the situation of his life. So, you know, it's a very horrible situation. So he understood, yes, this is my position. So gradually, by Vidura's instructions, his you know, extreme attachment to living, you know, trying to enjoy, you know, family life, and you know, political life, and you know, his bodily existence, gradually that attachment subsided, and he became detached. He decided that you know, there is no reason for me to maintain that attachment, and he decided that he would leave for the forest. So he understood that Yudhisthira, who was always very kind to him, would not very easily, you know, accede to letting Dhritarashtra, you know, live a great life of difficulty, a life of great difficulty in the wilds. And so he understood that he could not speak his determination to leave to the forest to anyone. He didn't even reply to Madhura. He just folded his palms, bowed his head, and then returned to his bedchambers. Not the bedroom chamber, but his chambers where he was living, and then left. So he came to this realization that his life was that he had ruined his existence, and he was you know, continuing to live a life that was in effect at this point useless. I remember coming to this conclusion myself when I was about 16, because of my misspent youth. I used to take some intoxication, a lot of intoxication, and you always feel that you're getting these great realizations. You know, when people are intoxicated, they always think that they're there's so much elevated knowledge, you know, coming to them. But actually, it's ignorance. You know, one time I decided that I thought, gee, you know, when I'm not high as a kite, I can't remember of any of those great realizations, but I know I'm having these wonderful thoughts. They're very elevated. So I thought, next time what I'll do is I'll write it down, so that when I sober up, I remember my great realization. One time I was I'd forgotten I'd written it down. One time I was flicking through this little book I had where I'd written down my great realization. And in it was one sentence. That one sentence said, "I've ruined my life." And so, you know, there must have been some realization there. That was my understanding. I've ruined my life. So, you know, because it was just living for sense gratification is, I understood that it was, a shameless and useless existence. So, actually, this is the position of all living entities, that they're tightly bound by a network of material affinities. Even though they're frustrated, this is elaborated upon in the third canto by Lord Kapila Dev. He describes, in very strong terms that, people living in this world, they become very, very attached to the family and, the body and, different things of this world. And because of that strong attachment, even though their life is, very a degraded existence, a very miserable existence, very empty, an illusory existence, people cling on to it, because of that attachment, right to the very end, right to the very end. So this is actually the position of everyone, everyone in this world. And it's actually the duty of the devotees to, help people to understand this. That's a very difficult job. We were discussing this in Bhakti Bhagava yesterday. That's actually the duty of the pure devotees, because the pure devotees, that means, pure devotee means, Nādhanam nājanam nāsundarim kavitam bhajikrishikami mamma janmani janmanishvayi bhavatad bhakti hojikitvayi. That, the pure devotees have no desire to, live in this world to gain wealth or to gain, attraction of the opposite sex or to have many followers. Pure devotees are not even looking for their own liberation. They simply want to serve the mission of the Supreme Lord. So, it's the business of the pure devotees to help people to understand that their existence in material existence is a very horrible existence. But because people are so attached to that, it is very, very hard, to help people to understand that. The average person, if you try to say to them, your life is useless. You are a miserable wretch of a person living a useless existence. It's very difficult. But actually, that's the duty of a devotee, is to somehow, eventually get that message across. So Vidura, after a lifetime, he did that. Srila Prabhupada makes the point here that, there is hope for everyone, because despite a whole lifetime of failure, still Dhritarashtra, he achieved the greatest success in self-realization. Srila Prabhupada uses the term success in self-realization. He doesn't use the term success in God-realization because Dhritarashtra hadn't properly developed his relationship with the Supreme Lord. Dhritarashtra understood that Krishna was the Supreme Lord. He accepted that fact. He stated that, I accept that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but despite that, I cannot control my senses, my mind, my senses like that. So, he understood that. So therefore, we will see as the pastime unfolds that Dhritarashtra achieved liberation. He didn't go back to Godhead. Srila Prabhupada mentions, I'm not sure if it's not in this purport, other purports, that after hundreds and hundreds of lifetimes where one is somewhat on the liberated platform, such as what Dhritarashtra achieved, one may come to the platform where they can perform devotional service. But Dhritarashtra had actually committed so many offences to the pure devotees of the Lord that Madhura was not inclined to give him what he didn't deserve. He knew that would not be very pleasing to Krishna. So these instructions by Madhura to Dhritarashtra are basically on the platform of jnana. Madhura is speaking some, he's not speaking the science of bhakti yoga to Dhritarashtra. He's speaking about bondage in material existence and becoming liberated from material existence. He's not describing to him the science of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the science of bhakti, and how to develop that. There's a tinge of bhakti, no doubt, in Madhura's instructions, but he's not giving that. He's not elevating Dhritarashtra to the platform of bhakti yoga or prema bhakti because of, he understood Dhritarashtra's offences were so severe. But so Prabhupada uses the term that he can achieve, despite his life being a failure in all respects, a whole lifetime of failure, still he could achieve the greatest success in self-realization. The greatest success in self-realization, of course, is to obtain, complete liberation from material existence, which, Dhritarashtra eventually achieved. But actually, from here, Prabhupada says that Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, the great principal of the principles of Srimad Bhagavatam, stressed the importance of associating with sadhus, pure devotees of the Lord. He said that even by a moment's association with a pure devotee, one can achieve all perfection. In the third canto also, Srila Prabhupada discussing this same point, and also giving again the example of his own life with Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati, he describes there also that the pure devotee of the Lord, they can give, they have this potency that they can give liberation immediately, straight away, even with one word. This is the potency of a pure devotee. With one word, they can give immediate liberation. So powerful is association. So one may question, if one is associating with the pure devotee of the Lord and they can give liberation so easily, they can also give Krishna, then how is it that sometimes after many, many years sometimes of association we see that sometimes people who come to Krishna consciousness are not achieving the desired success they sometimes we see that sometimes devotees may go back to a conditioned existence, or may, you know, their advancement in Krishna consciousness may be very, very slow, you know, and very meagre. So Srila Prabhupada explains that you know, if we ignite a fire and you put a spark on you know, dry wood, then immediately it will blaze, that wood. Yeah. And then, you know, the ghee is poured on and, you know, the fire continues to burn very, very strongly. If the wood is green, you know, or wet, you know, it doesn't, it takes a lot of effort to ignite it and to keep it burning. And then if during that effort is being put there and someone is also pouring water onto the wood, then, you know, it can even put that fire out. So that wetting process, as Prabhupada calls it, is, you know, sense gratification. As described, you know, the tenth offence of the holy name, that if it is an offence of the holy name to maintain material attachments even after understanding so many instructions on this matter, you know, that means that when devotees continue you know, a certain degree of sense gratification, it means that they are reducing they are inhibiting the efficacy or the potency of association with the pure devotees of the Lord, like that. And, you know, if there are very severe offences such as Vaishnava Aparad, then that also, even if you know, one may attain liberation, but coming to the platform of prema bhakti is seriously inhibited. Therefore, you know, such as Srila Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur points out, that, you know, the four Kumaras, they went to see Pudnarayan Vaikuntha, and, you know, there was some offence to the gatekeepers, Jaya and Vijaya, who are residents of Vaikuntha. And the Lord awarded them his mercy up to the point of allowing them to attain Santa Rasa, which means that they can appreciate the glories of the Lord and take up the service of the Lord by preaching in the material world. But the full elevation into Dasya Rasa, that real first level of you know, proper level of prema bhakti, they could not attain. And that was because the level of prema that they attained was reduced because of the aparad. So even they attained the association of the Lord, the association of the Lord's devotees, because there was an aparad there. It actually, even they took up devotional service, still there is some reduction in how far they can advance on the platform of, you know, prema bhakti. So we see that you know, it's possible to actually associate with devotees even for long, long, long periods of time, and actually for many, many hundreds of years, hundreds of lifetimes. You know, that verse, I may chant the holy name of the Lord for many, many lifetimes. But, you know, if one can, if the chanting is has offences, then one will not achieve prema bhakti. We say that every morning. But one can actually associate, even with devotees, for hundreds of lifetimes. and not, you know, come to the platform of, you know, mature prema bhakti. Or, you know, one can even remain somewhat, you know, somewhat liberated from material existence. You know, there are devotees who may spend hundreds of lifetimes literally, you know, with an understanding of Krishna, and they're somewhat immune to the material existence compared to persons who have no relationship with Krishna whatsoever. But if there are serious aparads and offences to the holy name, they will remain that on that platform like that. So, but what happens, of course, is that when people see, or here is someone who's associated with a great Vaishnava, the scriptures are saying, you know, a moment's association, one can achieve, you know, the greatest success. And yet we're seeing, oh, so many Vaishnavas have associated, and, you know, we don't see that that success is there. So therefore it has to be understood. It is not a reflection of a lack of potency in the pure devotees of the Lord. It's actually a reflection of the, you know, offences that, or the lack of application that may be there. But still, it's good. You know, it's still any attachment to Krishna is still good. Anyone who's chanting the holy names, we should all. So even though, from one perspective, we're saying, okay, there may be offences, but still, from the devotee's perspective, anyone who's chanting the holy name at all, especially the holy names of Krishna, that is good. Just like in New Zealand, Srila Prabhupada was, they were telling Srila Prabhupada that, you know, they're putting newspaper articles that, you know, about, you know, the Hare Krishnas, you know, they're bad, and the Hare Krishnas are this, and all, you know, these bad statements. And Srila Prabhupada said, you know, that is good. Yeah, you stand like, you know, they say, oh, we don't want these Hare Krishnas. They've just chanted Hare Krishna. He was very pleased. He was very happy. You know. So, you know, a devotee is, not that they develop a critical, or, you know, anyone who, you know, comes to Krishna on any level is very pleasing to a devotee. But still, we should also understand that if someone actually wants to make advancement and, you know, tangibly develop, you know, pure devotional service and go back to Godhead in this lifetime, then there's a difference in, you know, how they chant the holy names and like that. So Srila Prabhupada said that, you know, because one devotee said to Srila Prabhupada that he was describing that you know, we preach Krishna consciousness, and sometimes people, you know, you say that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. There are many people who sort of accept that, and they also accept, sometimes we explain to them that their, you know, material existence is somewhat, you know, pitiful. And sometimes they'll accept that, although they don't necessarily do much about it, you know, and sometimes devotees can become a little, say, you know, despondent, oh, we're preaching, but they seem to be staying there, they sort of accept that they're not really doing anything. So one devotee was saying that to Prabhupada, that, you know, they're like Dhritarashtra, as if it, you know, it's a bad thing, you know, a criticism. But Prabhupada said, no, at least, if they can at least accept Krishna consciousness like Dhritarashtra, then that is good. Dhritarashtra actually accepted that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that is good. And because of that, and he also accepted eventually from Vidura he accepted from the very beginning that he couldn't control his mind and senses. He couldn't give up sense gratification. He couldn't follow Krishna's instructions, therefore. But still, in the end, he was liberated. Because at least the minimum, if the minimum is there, it will have effect. So he attained liberation. Same with Duryodhana. Duryodhana committed many offences, but in the end, he was also liberated. So, but if one wants to derive the full benefit from even a moment's association with Prabhupada, with the pure devotee, then of course we can take Prabhupada's example. Now, Prabhupada's example is, he describes it here, that he says, we're not ashamed to admit that this fact was experienced in our practical life, were we not favoured by His divine grace. Sri Srimad Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami, by our first meeting for a few minutes only, it would have been impossible for us to accept this mighty task of describing Srimad Bhagavatam in English. Without seeing him, at that opportune moment, we could have become a very great business magnate, but never would we have been able to walk the path of liberation and be engaged in the factual service of the Lord under the instructions of His divine grace. Now, one time, Srila Prabhupada, on the disappearance day of Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he was discussing this point. He was describing that, Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati, he is called Gaura Shakti, that he is, represents, he is empowered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, who is Krishna himself, of course. He is directly empowered by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to fulfill the Lord's mission, as Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. Therefore, in 1918, he established the Gaudiya Math to fulfill the mission of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, which is Pithiviti Achiyatan Nagarari Gram, Sarvachar Pachara Hoivev Modanam. That Lord Chaitanya wanted that as many towns and villages there are all over the world, that His holy name would be chanted in each and every one of those. So Srila Bhakti Siddhanta set up the Gaudiya Math in order to fulfill that mission. So in 1922, Srila Prabhupada met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. He says, in this lecture, he said, by chance or prediction, as you think, because, it is understood there were predictions by the Lord and many great devotees in the scriptures that, the great Acharya would spread the Krishna consciousness movement all over the world. So that was predicted. And of course, there was only one person who did that, so therefore Prabhupada says, as predicted, and so he understood, well, I did it. It was predicted someone would do it. I did it. No one else did it, so it must be, all by chance, as you please. So he met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta. So, it's interesting to, understand Srila Prabhupada's mood here, because he says something that appears to be opposite later. That when he met Srila Bhakti Siddhanta, he was immediately convinced. And Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur wanted Prabhupada to join immediately. You start preaching right now. He wanted him to join. That's what Prabhupada said. He wanted him to take up that mission straight away. Prabhupada said he was thinking that in 1918 he got married, in 1921 he had his first son, and he was a manager of a big chemical factory, And he thought, so I've got so many responsibilities. So of course, you know, we can, you know, who is thinking like this? Everyone is thinking, you know, that you hear the instructions of a devotee, that about one's existence, and about that, you know, one should, you know, serve the Supreme Lord, Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And merely people begin to think, well, you know, I've just recently got married, you know, I have my children, and, you know, just took it, taken out a mortgage, you know, I've got this, got the new job, and, you know, just took it, got a new car. So, you know, those things start to, you know, therefore I've got so many responsibilities. That's what Prabhupada said, he was thinking. So he thought, so how can I join immediately? It's not my duty. That's what he said. So Srila Prabhupada says, that was my mistake. I should have joined immediately. But Maya is there. So now we explained before that Srila Prabhupada is recognizing that by chance or prediction, you know, he understood that he fulfilled a great prophecy by, you know, the Lord and so many great Vaishnavas. But there's never a moment of pride that actually the pure devotees of the Lord, they always consider that they're the most, you know, say, unqualified to serve the Lord. And in fact, everyone else is serving nicely, but their own, you know, activities of service and mentality of service is the least out of everyone. It's very difficult to understand, you know, the mind of the pure devotee of the Lord, but he's thinking, you know. Even though a devotee may do something extremely wonderful, where it's obvious that, you know, the devotee has been empowered by the spiritual master or by the Supreme Lord to do something wonderful, the devotee never budges from his position, the pure devotee, of, you know, that thinking that, you know, what service can I do for Krishna? Krishna is unlimited. That means they properly understand Krishna and they properly understand Krishna's devotees. You know, who can be proud in the presence of Srimati Radharani? You know, Srimati Radharani, and we think, oh no, she is serving Krishna so nicely. You know, and the residents of Vrindavan, you know, can we compare ourselves to, you know, Srimati Radharani's service? No, we think, what am I doing? You know, just a nuisance. You know. So, and Krishna is unlimited. I have done so much service for Krishna, as described by Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to Mukundadat, that Mukundadat wanted to liberate the whole universe. And Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu explained, yes, even if, yes, your wish is fulfilled, I will empty out this whole universe, send them all back to the spiritual world. But what is that? It's like, you know, one mustard seed and a big sack of mustard seeds. A devotee is always, what service, you know, can I actually do? Krishna is unlimited. So, you know, a devotee properly understands, they always have a proper understanding, the unlimited nature of Krishna and the glorious nature of Krishna's devotees, you know, especially in, you know, Vrindavan. So, but Prabhupada says, but Maya is there. Maya was there. Now, again, you know, that is the nature of the pure devotees of the Lord, that they're thinking that, you know, no matter how much wonderful service they're doing, they're thinking, you know, what am I doing? You know, I must be in Maya, you know, because I just, you know, I should be doing something more, you know. They're never satisfied, oh, I've done so much. You know, sometimes you get devotees like that, that, you know, look, you know, back in the 80s, you know, I spent a couple of years as a devotee, you know, I've done something for Krishna, and, you know, I did so much, like that, you know. So that's it, you know, I'm set, you know, like that. But, you know, devotees like Srila Prabhupada, you know, they're always in the mood that, you know, what am I actually doing? You know, I should be doing more. Here, he's saying Maya is there, but actually, this is, he's showing us how we should be thinking. Because, you know, where was the Maya for Srila Prabhupada? Actually, Prabhupada did join immediately, in another sense, because he immediately, as we, you know, if you read that book, A Lifetime in Preparation, Srila Prabhupada, you know, he cultivated the techniques of preaching. He studied the entire Vaishnava philosophy. I mean, if you hear Srila Prabhupada speak, you know, he just rattles off the entire philosophy, you know, it's all there, you know. He spent his lifetime and just absorbed the philosophy, studied it and practiced the techniques of preaching, you know, to everyone he met. Everyone he met from that point, all his conversations, you know. When he was listening, even mundane conversations, which appeared to be just ordinary conversations, he was gathering preaching ammunition, which, you know, in his lectures when he preached around the world, many of those conversations, he used that ammunition. Srila Prabhupada never wasted a moment. In 1944, of course, he, you know, started the Bhakti Godhead single-handedly. You know, there's no question that Srila Prabhupada didn't immediately take up that mission. But he was taking it up thinking that, you know, if he would become, you know, generate a lot of finances, that would finance his mission to preach Krishna consciousness. So he was trying to serve Srila Bhakti Siddhanta Sarasvati at the core, but Krishna wanted to, you know, perform another leela with Srila Prabhupada to, you know, send him penniless and friendless to America at an advanced age after some heart attacks and just show that, you know, his determination. So there are other things, but Srila Prabhupada was thinking, you know, in a very humble way. But we should be thinking like that. How many years ago did a devotee say to me that, you know, well, why don't you, you know, surrender to Krishna, and Krishna's the Supreme Personality of Godhead, and, you know, you're suffering in material existence. You think, yes, yes, I know all this, I'm doing something, you know, you can't say I'm not, you know. But we should be thinking like that. I'm not doing anything, you know, I should be taking, you know, in my next lifetime, you know, how many lifetimes have we had in this material world? And if we count up all those billions of lifetimes, when do we have the opportunity to associate with Srila Prabhupada? You know, there's such a, you know, that doesn't come, as it describes in, you know, in every lifetime you get a mother and a father, but not in every lifetime will you get a spiritual master, especially someone of the caliber of Srila Prabhupada. You know, and if we miss the opportunity of Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's Sankirtan movement, where he makes going back to Godhead as easy as breathing. You know, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama. You know, the opportunities available now are the greatest opportunities that are possible on the transcendental level to be given to a living entity while they're in material existence. Of all the incarnations you may hear instructions from, of all the scriptures you may hear instructions from, of all the devotees you may get to associate with, you know, to associate, you know, with Srila Prabhupada and his followers in Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's movement, and to chant the Hare Krishna Maha Mantra, that opportunity is the rarest and the greatest. Why hesitate? Why hesitate? So, for us, we should think, you know, why am I hesitating? You know, why do I continue this miserable existence, you know, as a half a devotee or something? So, you know, Srila Prabhupada is teaching us by his own humble example. But, you know, he's feeling that. They're not, when a devotee feels, you know, very humble, it's not an artificial show. They actually feel like that. That's their proper mood. So, I remember when I became a devotee, that thought actually runs through my head, you know, that I'd read the Bhagavad Gita, I'd read the Nectar Devotion, and I met a devotee who said, come back to the temple, and I understood at that split second that if I don't go back, if I, you know, a devotee said, just, you know, come back to the temple, I thought, if I just take that opportunity, you know, it's there. If I go back home, you know, you get caught up in, you know, everything, and, you know, I thought, no, just take it immediately, you know, just don't hesitate. So, you know, I took that, I never regret that decision. It was the best decision I ever made in my life. But you know, that danger is there, that when you sort of hesitate, the illusory nature of the material energy covers one over, even for those associating with Krishna consciousness. You know, they feel it. You go home to the family, and, you know, there's the relatives, and there's this, and there's that, and there's that, and it just, it covers you. And what happens is that a year can go by, and a year goes by, and you think, oh God, I wanted to read the Srimad Bhagavatam, I didn't do that. I wanted to read even Bhagavad Gita, I didn't do that. I wanted to read a couple of Prabhupada's small books, I didn't do that. I wanted to, you know, make my rounds, you know, chant 16 rounds properly, you know, whenever I chant, I'm spacing out, you know, I didn't do that. Maybe next year comes by, and then, you know, again the Maya captures, you know, and then 10 years go by like that, and the lifetime goes by. And then the habits are just so, you know, embedded in, and of course, you know, if in that time because of some, you know, too many offences to the holy name, by too much sense gratification, and then when devotees are trying to give us instruction, we become angry at them, and then become Vaishnava aparad, then, you know, sometimes you cross the border, you know, where it's difficult to get back. You know. So, you know, this is the instruction of Vidura, and you know, this example by Dhritarashtra is very good. That, you know, at some point you've just, you know, you've got to get beyond the point of accepting Krishna as God and saying, yeah, he's God, I'd like to really serve him properly, but I just can't control my mind and senses, you know. So we'll leave. You know, as devotees, we actually have to, and the way to do that is always associate, especially with devotees who are, you know, nicely, you know, speaking in such a way as to help to cut those attachments. One should not see them as the enemy, but one should associate with them that they are, you know, therefore Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur says that, you know, one who praises me, he's my enemy, and one who criticizes me, he's my friend. Because, you know, that praise, oh yes, you are, you know, wonderful in so many regards like this, you know, it's you know, it creates nice friendships, what have you, but you know, if we want to maintain nice friendships in the material world, then that is good. But, you know, to associate with devotees who are actually helping us by, you know, really pushing, you know, they're pushing, always pushing towards Krishna, that's good association. That's it. And if we take that association and you know, avoid maintaining material attachments and avoid offences, it will act very, very quickly. And therefore Prabhupada says that in that association where you're keeping yourself like the dry wood, what you cannot achieve in millions of lifetimes, you will achieve in this one lifetime. That's what it means, that the association of the, you know, pure devotees of the Lord is, you know, is the most valuable thing. That what you cannot achieve in millions of lifetimes, in this lifetime, you will achieve it. right there. So these are some of the messages of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Hare Krishna.
You mentioned earlier that people in general are like, you know, it's our duty to try and preach to them and try and extricate them from their position, but it's very, very difficult. So what about for ourselves? Unless we're like a very advanced devotees, then we still have some of this Dhritarashtra-like consciousness, and especially in household life, you know, we're somewhat in the world. Seems like even as devotees, you know, especially with greenhouses, you can get easily comfortable, you know, you got a nice house, you got a nice wife, children, a nice car, you've got money. But it seems like devotees aren't, maybe sometimes they're not preaching to us. They're preaching to us, and they're trying to extricate us.
Yes.
From this position, sometimes people like devotees think, well, you know, they're devotees, they're fine, we just have to preach to the people out there.
That's a good point. That's my suggestion is they should take your association. And I know you're always a good association, always giving good instruction. Actually, you're a very good example of the devotees, you know, preaching, constantly preaching. As they say, a rolling stone gathers no moss. So my suggestion is that you should take your association. And it's like that when you associate, especially with devotees who are, have a strong preaching mood. Generally, those who have a strong preaching mood, there's a very powerful sense of compassion, and that sense of compassion is because they understand that actually everyone is suffering in the material world, and they feel very compassionate, you know, so they preach. Sometimes devotees, if we feel that we're enjoying, you know, a nice husband, wife, or a couple of children like that, and we're actually forgetting the miserable existence, material existence, then, that preaching mood is not very strong. So, association with devotees, especially those who are very strong in preaching, is good. And your point, that devotees should preach to each other, as you know, or help each other, push each other, along the path. It's a fact, and of course we are doing that. Therefore, we're doing it more and more in the sense that that's what the Bhakti Shastri, the Bhakti Vaibhava, the Nam Hara programs, the Bhakti Bhiksha programs. That's what they should be doing. Hare Krishna. Is that all? Do we have to press anything? Actually, I don't know how much we do this, but as far as, because we have a lot of Harinam Bhakti Bhiksha programs practically throughout Melbourne, the method that we're supposed to follow is that it is supposed to be coordinated so that senior devotees actually oversee that preaching. As we say, senior devotees generally have a more compassionate and preaching mood. If that's not happening, what can happen, and which may even be happening now with some of the Bhakti Bhiksha programs, is that it can become a social gathering, where devotees can, they go there and there's nice kirtan, and you know, the kids play, and you know, there's nice prasadam, and make good friends, and you know, the helping, you know, to literally prepare for the moment of death in a very, you know, systematic way, and you know, making, you know, good progress in cutting our attachments to material existence and material part of our relationships, that may not be there, you know. Therefore, you know, the programs that are here, I'm not sure what they do in other states as well, but if they're not actually monitored by senior devotees, it can become like that, that, you know, just, you know, there's some benefit. It's all good. But as far as devotees really, you know, strongly getting a strong and quick progressive detachment from material existence and becoming very attached to just, you know, dedicating themselves to Lord Chaitanya's Mahaprabhu's movement, you know, that may not, that may be very weak. So, but those programs are meant for preaching to devotees. New people come, but they're actually supposed to, those devotees are supposed to help each other in the same way. A few magical tricks. You know, in the same way that Vidura is doing with Dhritarashtra. Otherwise, you know, in the same way we don't want to see materialists just going to hell and spending millions of years in material existence, actually a you know, senior devotee doesn't want to see their god brother to spend 1,000 lifetimes before they go back to Godhead. Because they know if that's their mood, they may actually end up back in the material world, because there's no guarantee. We don't, you know, you can actually end up, you know, taking Krishna consciousness and, you know, delay going back to the spiritual world by hundreds and thousands of lifetimes. You know, if someone again becomes attached to material existence and just misses that opportunity, you know, what they've done in devotional service will ultimately bear fruits, but after, you know, a long, long time. So, in the same way, we don't want to see our god brothers or god sisters really dawdling behind with the chance that they may actually get a bit lost. Yeah.
Just one comment to you, Prabhu. We have to update the mood of Srila Prabhupada. Wherever he was going, he was asked, who is coming to meet me today? Whom am I going to preach?
Yes.
And this is the mood we have to produce.
That's right. Srila Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakura used to say to his disciples, there is no reason why any of my disciples cannot go back to Godhead in this very lifetime. Well, there's no reason. And, you know, Srila Prabhupada would say the same to us. There's no reason why everyone in this room cannot go back to Godhead in this very lifetime.
Also, we reduced down 16 down from the 64.
But to go back to Godhead in this lifetime, then what have we got to do? We've got to check this. We've got to prepare that at the moment of death, what are we going to want? At the moment of death, are we going to, our mind races to our family attachments, our properties, our car, our body, you know? Or have we spent every day cultivating, you know, that mood that at the time of death, I just want to go to Krishna, I just want to go to Krishna, 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 like that. And therefore Prabhupada says, you know, you can chant Hare Krishna, Hare, Hare Krishna, 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 but at the time of death, you know, you go, squawk, like, you know, like a parrot. You know, sometimes devotees can test themselves that, you know, if there's a dangerous situation and, you know, you nearly burnt yourself, you nearly, you know, had a car accident or, you know, something. What did you say? What did you yell out? Some profanity? Or did Krishna immediately pop into your head? Did you immediately call out Krishna's name? You can test it. Because at the time of death, it may not happen. So, yeah, that's a lot of work. It's actually a lot of work to, you know, cultivate that sort of, mind to be just so fixed on Krishna at the time of death. Depending upon what we've done in this life and previous lifetimes, it may be more work for some than others. So we have to, estimate that. Okay, yeah, I have a lot of work to do. And time is running out. What is my age? What are my circumstances? So, I better work on this every day, all day.
In your lecture, Prabhu, you mentioned that our Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said that the one who finds faults with you is your real friend. You know? But we see this contemporary society that it's very difficult, so even people we don't like to talk about the faults or anything, they get angry and all that. Especially even in the devotee circle also, we see sometimes that, when we tell them also, they're not very appreciative of that. So how do you deal with that kind of situation?
Well, you might have to give them 10 praises so that they can accept one criticism. And then as they advance, they will only need 7 praises. And they might accept 2 criticisms.
It could not be a criticism also.
A constructive criticism. Our movement is based upon 4 principles. Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu established Sanatan Goswami to establish the principle of humility. So he is the acharya who personifies. Haridas Thakur is the acharya who personifies the pillar of tolerance. And third one. Renunciation. What's that? Raghunath Das Goswami. Raghunath Das Goswami is the pillar of renunciation, the personification. And Swarup Damodar is the personification of the example of criticism. That is the fourth pillar, of which those 4 pillars, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu based. Rested this movement of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Criticism is one of the main pillars of this movement. It's not that it's something that's occasionally we give some constructive criticism. It is a main pillar, of our society. But it is constructive criticism. Therefore, anyone approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to do service, they Shrik Damodar would criticize. Oh, you cannot offer this. No, that's not acceptable. You go back and you redo this, and you develop this mood, and then come back. And, so actually, that is, anyone who comes to Krishna consciousness, the devotees, the criticism is that they're saying, well, you want to do this for Krishna, but he won't accept it. But if you want him to accept it, make this adjustment. They're helping people to present their service in a way that will be accepted by Krishna. That is the criticism. And, if we want to do the service which captures the Lord's attention fully, immediately, and unlimitedly, then there is a difference. We can serve Krishna in one way, it may not capture his attention so much. You serve Krishna in another way and you immediately capture his full attention. And Srila Prabhupada pointed out that preaching, that preaching is that way where you get immediate recognition from Krishna. But then that preaching, are you preaching or, you know, are you scaring people away from Krishna consciousness? So that also has to be examined. Therefore, sometimes, you know, I've heard different devotees say to Prabhupada, yes, we should preach. And Prabhupada said, that's not for you. First you qualify. Not anyone can preach, he says. So that also... So, you know, criticism, it has to be done. Therefore, we actually have to learn to do it as a society in such a way that we're criticizing. And that criticism means that people are serving Krishna in a way that's very pleasing and in a way that they're rapidly going back to Godhead. That's good criticism. If we're criticizing that someone is running away from Krishna, running away from the devotees, running away from ISKCON, that criticism is, you know, that's not service. That should never be done.
Just a modest addition to that, in the experience of Mahasuru Maharaj Kamal Krishna Goswami, when Srila Prabhupada used to chastise the devotees, it was on the level that they could receive. So you have to look at the other devotees and then go to the level that they can actually get. Otherwise, as you said, they're going to keep running away.
That's right.
You might know everything, and you can tell them everything.
The more advanced, the more you can criticize. So your spiritual master, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, I can tell you the story there. That when I was in Mayapur, and was it in 1980? I was, when the gurus were there, I always used to try, because I was a brahmachari, and I used to always try to serve the gurus, so I was always up there and I was outside the rooms. And what I found was that quite often their servants didn't come from the country where they were coming, and the guru quite often arrived there without a servant, so I always took the opportunity, so I always got a couple of days service in. And then sometimes the servants got sick, so I'd then go to the next guru like this. So I used to... Anyway, one time I was, I was serving one of the gurus, but he was in a room next to Tamal Krishna Maharaj. So early in the morning, I was sitting, you know, on the balcony up there, chanting, you know, very quietly, Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna. I mean, you know, you couldn't hear me. Tamal Krishna Maharaj comes out. He says, can you stop chanting so loudly? You know, you're disturbing me. So he went back in his room. I wasn't chanting loudly. So anyway, I started chanting like this. Can anyone hear me? Even with the mic, right? A couple of minutes later, he comes in. You go up the end of the balcony and you chant the rounds up there. And so, you know, I went to the dog, and I thought, you know, even if you can't hear me, my chanting must be so offensive, you know, to Krishna, that you know, my rounds must be so bad. But, you know, it's very helpful, you know, to, you know, to help us to understand. And we have to improve a lot.
As you know, that he was very well known for being a very heavy guru, you know, Tamal Krishna Maharaj. And towards the later part of his preaching, somebody asked him this question, you know, Maharaj, how come you become so mellow? And then Srila Gurudev asked, you know, tell me, why do you think I changed like this? And then people were giving different answers. And then somebody said, actually, Maharaj, your disciples did not take your instructions, that's why you become. That's the right answer.
Mm. Yeah.
He can
criticize,
but he
did
not take it.
That's right.
Jack, to answer question, when he first joined the temple, he heard some advice that, you know, if you've got material thoughts coming into your mind all the time, well, chanting loudly is good, but you're disturbing devotees, maybe you should go out in the forest and chant. I think it was in San Francisco, it was a very, very tall mountain there, Golden Gate Bridge there. And so he went up the top of the mountain and was chanting, so it was fantastic. No other instruction.
That's it. All right then. Hare Krishna.